On the Radar, an Eagle News program that takes you beyond the streets and brings you closer to national and international breaking news as it unfolds. Tune in every Monday to Friday from 1 to 2:30.
Good afternoon, Namibia. You are now locked into On the Radar, the show that keeps its fingers on the nation's pulse. I am your host, Ndafa Happy Juju, and for the next 90 minutes, we'll be diving deep into the stories that shape our lives, challenge our perspectives, and connect our communities. It's Tuesday, the 3rd of June, 2025, and the time is 3 minutes past the hour of 1300 hours. And just like that, we are 3 days into a brand new month. Whether you are at home, at work, or on the move, thank you for choosing us as your midday companion. On the Radar is your weekday rundown of all things current, from policy shifts and public protest to youth voices, culture, innovation, and everything in between. If it matters to Namibia, well, it matters right here. And don't forget, your voice has power. Join the conversation by calling on 083-288-401. Share your thoughts, ask questions, or just drop us a line. We are listening. So grab your notebook, turn up the volume, and get ready, because today's show is packed with the stories that move Namibia forward. Let's get into these top stories. The official media launch of the 3rd Namibia Oil and Gas Conference was held on Monday in Windhoek, ushering in the next phase of preparations for what promises to be a landmark event in the country's energy calendar. Set to take place from the 12th to the 15th of August 2025, the current conference will be hosted under the theme From Exploration to Action, Positioning Namibia as the Next Energy Frontier, hosted by the Economic Association of Namibia, EAN, in collaboration with the Namibia Investment Promotion and Development Board, NIPDB, and the Hannus Seader Foundation, HSF. The event is also backed by the National Petroleum Corporation of Namibia, NAMCOR, NSC Incorporated, and officially endorsed by the Ministry of Mines and Energy. The Namibia Oil and Gas Conference 2025 is expected to attract over 1,000 delegates from more than 50 countries, with 70 plus industry experts and 40 exhibitors sharing insights and exploring new opportunities. Key topics will include investment frameworks, regulatory clarity, local content development, workforce skills, and sustainable energy transitions. Speaking at the media launch, representatives from the EAN and the Ministry of Mines and Energy emphasized the conference's growing importance in shaping policy, attracting foreign investment, ensuring that Namibians benefit from the country's natural resources. With recent oil discoveries off Namibia's coast drawing international attention, and the theme From Exploration to Action, the 2025 Oil and Gas Conference is being seen as a timely platform to align the country's energy ambitions with inclusive economic development.
Is in innovation, especially around skills development. She's worked already and she's busy looking at what are the gaps in terms of skills for this sector specifically. And so it makes it easier when an investor comes and says, okay, we don't have the skills in the country, what are some of the skills that we can pivot? If an engineer can become an energy engineer instead of a civil, can they pivot? How easily can they pivot? What kind of training do we need? How do we prepare effectively for when the oil starts flowing? So our key actions in this area include supporting key players with the development of local supply database to streamline procurement visibility and foster B2B linkages between local MSMEs and international operators. We're also supporting JV formation and skills-based partnerships by working with Petrofund Namibia, vocational institutions and industry players. We need to prepare for this. It's very critical. Otherwise, we're going to find ourselves at the end of the day, you know, all this. Everybody was here. They did what they needed to do here, and then they left, and no capacity was built locally. And then we are promoting cluster-based development zones around oil and gas infrastructure, helps to reduce cost, increase Namibia's competitiveness and localized production. Local content must be more than a compliance checkbox. It must become an engine for transformation for our country. Number 3, we are fostering youth employment through skills development. Human capital development is a critical enabler of investment readiness. One of the key factors that investors are looking for is human capital. How ready is any country ready to open up a specific industry that they want to invest in? And that's why our 2025 programming places a renewed focus on youth, mentorship, and workforce alignment. Under this priority, we're hosting the NIPDB Business Matchmaking Day on 15th August during the conference to link young professionals, MSMEs, and innovators with potential investors, contractors, and service buyers. This isn't just about employment. It's about careers, it's about leadership, and ensuring that the energy sector evolution is led by the millennials for all to benefit from. And in conclusion, the NIPDB remains committed to working with all our partners to ensure that this sector delivers on its promise, not just in GDP terms, but in the tangible improvement of livelihoods, the strengthening of our institutions, and the diversification of our industrial base. The future of Namibia's oil and gas industry is not offshore. It is here onshore, in our people, in our businesses, and our bold ambitions as a country. We look forward to welcoming everybody to the third Namibia Oil and Gas Conference this August. And we thank you very much, and we really look forward to working with all the key stakeholders to ensure that we deliver on, you know, not only a great conference, but that we deliver on a great industry that we as Namibians can be proud of. We cannot leave the country the same after we are out. Thank you very much.
And now let's listen to another speaker speaking at the official launch of the third Namibia Oil and Gas Conference yesterday.
Holistic and inclusive industrial development, one that integrates oil and gas into the broader economy, establishes meaningful backward and forward linkages, creates sustainable jobs, and ultimately improves the social welfare of Namibian people. So the National Oil and Gas Conference Expedition last year saw a 52% growth from the inaugural event in 2023-2024 and a 40% increase in attendees within the same period. The National Oil and Gas Conference in 2025 will be doubling in size with the introduction of a new hall to give access to more entrepreneurs and SMEs as well as entrance to the market at this year's event. The continued growth and relevance of this conference are evidenced by the eager and enthusiastic participation of both local and international stakeholders. Furthermore, this year we expect 1,012 delegates, up from the 841 last year, as well as 29 sponsors and partners for the two exhibitors, 35 countries to participate, up from 24, as well as 71 speakers. And this really will be a milestone for us this year in the four-day agenda, which is set to be packed with quite a lot of interesting speakers as well as activities. The third edition stands as a powerful testament to the influence this platform holds and the expanding interest it generates, not only in Namibia but across borders. This reaffirmed by our belief in the importance of maintaining such a space. This is one that encourages both dialogue, collaboration, and strategic thinking. The first edition of the conference was centered on fueling knowledge and innovation, laying the groundwork for a strategic roadmap that could guide both public and private stakeholders in maximizing the benefits of the investments in the sector. The second edition was built upon this foundation by tackling critical themes such as sustainable development, investment opportunities, and technological advancements. It highlighted the importance of understanding the industry's complexities while empowering Namibians to take ownership of this sector and contribute meaningfully to its evolution. So this year, under the theme From Exploration to Action, positioning Namibia as the next energy frontier, we turned our focus to a key part of national progress, making sure Namibia takes real steps to become a leader in energy. It is not enough that we have now discovered oil and gas. We must act with purpose to grow this sector in a way that brings real benefits to the country and its people. We are excited to expand the conference for 2025 and place a stronger emphasis on positioning Namibia as the next energy frontier. The oil and gas industry is rapidly evolving, and Namibia must keep up by taking clear steps to build and manage its energy future. This year's event will not only offer great opportunities for networking and discussions, while also showing how Namibia can lead in the global energy space through action.
You're tuned into On the Radar News Bulletin. We're taking a pause now and taking a trip to the marketplace, but we'll be back shortly with yet more news. Stay with us.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. Unemployed qualified teachers are protesting nationwide, demanding the abolition of job interviews and the implementation of mass recruitment, with the main demonstration taking place in Windhoek. Now, the group has submitted a petition to the Ministry of Education, Arts and Culture, calling for an end to what they describe as an unfair and slow recruitment process. Graduates gathered at the Teachers Resource Center in Katatura this morning, holding place cards and voicing their frustrations. Many cited years of unemployment, financial strain, and the emotional toil of sitting at home with qualifications while schools remain overcrowded. "We are qualified, yet we sit at home while classrooms are overcrowded," said one of the protesters. The demonstrations are calling for a fair, database-driven recruitment system that can ensure more equitable access to employment opportunities in the public education sector. "We are ready to teach. All we want is a fair chance," they declared. We also caught up with Dumeni Martin, who is an unemployed graduate since 2003. Let's take a listen. Good afternoon, Dumeni Martin, and welcome to On the Radar News Bulletin.
Hey, good afternoon, ma'am. I'm very fine.
Okay. I understand that you are part of the unemployed graduates or unemployed qualified teachers who are doing a protest or a march today. Now, can you kindly tell me what prompted this nationwide protest by unemployed qualified teachers?
What actually transpired the protest is that we have been unemployed for a very long time, and we are tired of being unemployed.
Mm-hmm.
And in this sense that If nothing has been done or will be done to us, we will not rest until we get the jobs we have studied for. That is literally it, what transpired there, this protest.
Yeah.
And there will be times that we are going to be tired of protest, and we are surely going to help whoever is in charge of job provision. It says that there's the Ministry of Education. Since they seem to have no plans for unemployed people. And we will not keep quiet. We will strive until betterment of our demands are made.
Mm.
Mm.
Now, why are graduates calling for the abolition of job interviews in the recruitment process?
We are actually calling upon abolishment of interviews because the system seems not to be working.
Yeah.
The system will be leaked. Because how on earth, their current statistics say, the amount of unemployed graduate teachers is amounting at 4,000, right? And you have a system, a recruitment system, which is keeping that certain of amount. It's not even approximate. It's not the exact answer. That certain amount of people unemployed, and you have the so-called interview. It's out of sense. It's not making sense at all. It needs to be altered or rechecked or something, because it doesn't have product. So we are saying the interviews should be abolished, or at least there must be a strategic plan to recruit or to accommodate unemployed graduates.
Mm-hmm.
So there seems to be a corruption somewhere, somehow. And we are reading in the newspapers every day, hearing of bribery. It's evident that our interview system is off. No sense. It is out of sense. It doesn't have perfect. Simply said.
Okay. Now, what is the group hoping to achieve by submitting a petition to the Ministry of Education?
Right now, we were our committee went to meet on the committee of the Minister of Education, and we are hoping that at least our demands are heard. And immediately after the call, my colleague just notified me that because we are hoping if they are not meeting our today's demand, we will not stop here. We'll camp here until what we are requesting is admitted. So, like my colleagues have told me, what they have agreed upon. He said, we gave them now, in the petition, we demanded 72 hours, but after, so we have a sort of discussion with them, now we have agreed upon 4 weeks. In that 4 weeks, they didn't provide a satisfactory answer to our petition. Then we will rightfully camp here at the Ministry of Education until our message is heard nationwide that yes, we are tired and we'll be tired of protesting. We are doing something. Yeah. We are up to something. Yeah, we are up to something. They must understand that. We are really tired, Jim.
Mm-hmm.
They must accommodate us. Yes.
Dumeni Martin, as a graduate of 2003, how do you suggest that the government ensure that teacher training institutions do align with actual market demand?
Can I just repeat your question, please?
How do you suggest that the government ensure that teacher training institutions align with actual market demand?
The government must look and re-strategize and must increase the number of classrooms, build schools everywhere in Namibia to accommodate the teachers. And we even propose in the petition that they must adopt the ratio of teachers to learners. Must increase, it must decrease to accommodate the number of, what people of us here in the street that are not employed.
Yeah.
And building classrooms, increasing at least they must even, adopt 2 teachers per classroom. Yeah. That will work on. Because how on earth a teacher, let's say 45 learners in one classroom, and for one teacher for that matter, how is that making sense? It's totally out of sense. At least they must cut the half of learners. One learner teacher ratio must adopt that strategy.
Mm.
It will work on.
Okay. Furthermore, Domeni, what else would you want to say in regards to your petition today? Perhaps something that I have not asked that you would want to actually use this opportunity to say it.
As an unemployed graduate, I would like to say, and specifically to the ministry, this is the message is to the Ministry of Education and all sectors, not teachers, because not only teachers that are not employed, there are masses of people there in our community that are not unemployed. They must find ways how to accommodate the masses of unemployed people.
Mm.
They must find plans, they must find strategies on how to accommodate the masses of the youth that is unemployed. Because what does this tell us if you have a minister in the office? What does this tell you? Like, you have a minister of education in the office with those thousand number of people unemployed. What does that tell you? Either incompetent or doesn't care at all with us. Doesn't have any plan with us. So now we feel hopeless and we are not trusting them government officials no more.
Yeah.
Yeah, isn't that? So I'm saying they must find strategies. They must find ways to accommodate us. Because these things offering courses, or you are saying, okay, let me think, they are saying, let's offer free education or something. And then you already have thousands and thousands of people in the street. They do not have a direction. That I'm saying, the Minister of Education must find a direction. They must find ways. They must build fun in schools to accommodate us.
Okay.
Because we are tired of them, yes.
Okay.
And we'll be tired of the protest.
Mm.
Yes. We'll be tired of the protest. And we'll do something contrary to protest. Maybe it's when they will get us better.
Okay. Dumeni, I sure hope that you and the group as well get your protest doesn't go in vain, and that your petition is well received and handled with the agency that you all desire. All the best.
Thank you.
Okay. In a statement released this morning, the Ministry of Education, Innovation, Youth, Sports, Arts and Culture stated that it recognizes the challenges faced by unemployed teacher graduates. While the issue of unemployment extends beyond the education sector, the ministry reaffirms its commitment to addressing this challenge. The ministry pointed out that the high rate of unemployment among qualified teachers is partly due to the continued production of teachers by trained institutions, which is more than the job market can absorb. Through various engagements with training institutions, we have sought to raise awareness and encourage these institutions to reduce their intake of teacher trainers in fields that are already saturated, while prioritizing areas where there is still a demand for teachers, the statement read. Additionally, the ministry is developing a plan to repurpose underutilized schools for various purposes, such as transforming them into community learning and development centers or resource schools for learners with special educational needs and disabilities in line with its mandate. The ministry has also identified overcrowded schools, primarily in urban areas where the teacher-to-learner ratio exceeds the recommended standard. Efforts are underway to conduct a post-provisioning norm audit and develop a 3-year regional decongestion plan. This plan will address all identified schools of concern, the ministry stated. The ministry outlined in their response the teacher-to-learner ratio average against popular belief that there is a need for more appointees of teachers. While others would argue that the existence of overcrowded classrooms, our schools in urban areas would denote a need for more appointments. Our national average, as per the 15th school day statistics for 2025, indicates that the teacher-learner ratio is 1 to 27 across all grades. This is below the norm outlined in the Secular Form of Education 25 or 2001, which indicates a ratio of 1 to 28 in pre-primary, 1 to 35 in primary, and 1 to 30 in secondary schools. The ministry says that there are many underutilized schools in rural areas. We'll pause here now, and we'll be back with yet more news after the commercial break. Stay tuned. You can also partake in the news bulletin by dialing in the number in studio 083-288-401.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Olio mnangeshefa no hara kushivifa oma akuro e kupitira mohorike radio station ayo Eagle FM. Enyamukuro olongaha. Ninge kwa tafano na Monica kushikondosha ipindi kono raheta tuimwe, heali imwe, ne heali, imwe imwe no hamano. That is 0817147111.
Taking flight has never been easier. Paratus is introducing SkyFi internet packages with speeds that will have you reaching for your seatbelt. Starting from $500, excluding VAT, per month, with speeds reaching up to 10 megabits per second. There's even a prepaid option where you can top up your SkyFi internet for just $15 per gigabyte. No contracts, no fuss. Visit your nearest Paratus branch to find out more. Or go to paratus.africa/Namibia to sign up online. Always
Paratus. Welcome back. In other news, the Minister of Education, Innovation, Youth, Sports, Arts and Culture, Sanet Steenkamp, is currently visiting the Karas region, where she met with the regional management team and held discussions with regional governor Aletta Frederick. Now, during the meeting, the minister highlighted one of the core challenges affecting education outcomes in the region. One of the key issues that contributes to the results in Karas region, which is not what it should be, is the gross absenteeism of school management, but especially of teachers, where no one is taking accountability to ensure that the teacher is held to account in the deep rural areas and in our towns for absenteeism, she pointed out to the governor. Minister Steenkamp emphasized the urgency of the matter, saying it is time to look these things in the eye. She called on principals and inspectors to take decisive action. Steps need to be taken against principal who are absent from work without leave, she stressed. Her visit forms part of the ministry's broader effort to strengthen accountability, improve school performance, and address challenges facing rural education delivery across the country. Let's take a listen.
I'm glad that you can speak freely on that. One of the key issues that contributes to the results in Karas region that is not what it should be is the gross absenteeism of school management, but especially of teachers, Honorable Governor, where no one is taking accountability to ensure that that teacher is held to account in the deep rural and in the urban areas in our towns for absenteeism. If I would ask now the HR to give us an overview of the summary of teacher absenteeism, they would be able to tell you, even with the leaves that are not completed, administrative processes and issues of accountability. I have the greatest respect for our teachers, but we cannot turn a blind eye any longer, Honorable Governor, on the realities what is taking place in our schools. If the teacher is not in the classroom, for whatever reason. And you were talking about the residents of this region. We have teachers also coming from other regions. They take their leave to travel back long distances. To Omasati, let us be honest, to Omasati, to Katima, it takes them 2 days to take leave to travel, it takes them 2 days to come back. Learners are without students. So it is time that we look these issues into the eye and that our principals take the steps that need to be taken, that our inspectors also need to take the steps that need to be taken against the principals who are absent from work without approved leave. Leave need to be negotiated. Leave is not that I can stand up and inform my supervisor that I'm taking leave. That is something you must change. They cannot just inform the supervisor, today I'm not coming to work via a message. Today I'm not coming to work, I could not find transport to come back to the school. Your first priority, your appointment, you chose to work in that particular school where you applied to be appointed. So the absenteeism of teachers, Honorable Governor, is something that is systemic. It's something that I have addressed on various occasions. The second issue is time on task. We have a teacher self-evaluation that must be filled on an annual basis where teachers account and say, my aim and my goal is to have 86% of my learners achieving an A, 75% of my learners knowing where they are should be achieving a B, and only 30% of my learners should be achieving a C or a D. That is a teacher self-evaluation.
Speaking on the extinction of indigenous languages, the minister stated that a language will survive if it is spoken, developed, and taught. She noted that Namibia has included indigenous languages within its school curriculum with a focus on early education. Children are taught in their mother tongue, the language spoken at home, from pre-grade up to grade 3 in order to strengthen their foundation and support better understanding and learning outcomes.
Appointed an independent task force. The former director of Oshikwato region, Ms. A.C. Stanisis, Mr. Bisek, former director for Karas, Dr. Manga, and some other official colleagues had a meeting yesterday. They would travel this country. Khoikhoikhoi, along with other indigenous languages, are now under the classification of UNESCO, listed as endangered. A level of endangered languages. The language will survive, Honorable Governor, if the language is spoken, and if the language is developed, and if the language is taught. That is the only way a language can survive. That is why South Africa came to Namibia, because we did something that many other countries never wanted to do. We included indigenous languages in our curriculum. And we said you are taught in the tongue of your mother, the spoken language at home, from pre-grade up to grade 3, so that we have the foundation strengthened for you to understand that in Afrikaans there is a deur, and in English, when that concept is formed in your head, in your mother tongue, you will be able to know now a deur is a dog. I'm now going very deep. But the junior primary teachers can tell us more. Mm-hmm. Honorable Governor, we will get that right. The task force will look at KPG. They have until the third week of June to come back. They travel the country. They will provide us with all the statistics. Yesterday, very interestingly, I met a KPG teacher who has been there for 25 years. All these years, he has been appointed temporary. He gets the best results, but he doesn't have the qualifications. And as a result, he cannot be appointed permanently. Now, how do we, in Namibia, this is the cases we have to present to Public Service Commission. How can a person give my life for our country, but when I retire, I have no benefits? How can we in the system make provision for those teachers? What can we do? So that conversation needs to continue at a different level. Mm-hmm. But these are the realities that we have on the ground. Mm-hmm. People are asking me, are you prepared to take in teachers from elsewhere, from Botswana, from South Africa, for Setswana and for Afrikaans? Let us first hone the skills in our own country before we look elsewhere for other skills. Honorable Governor, these are exciting times ahead of us. We are so pleased to be in the Taras region, I must tell you. But I also want to give quickly an opportunity through you, Honorable Governor, to ATA CEO, and if there's a need for our director of Ms. Muya, the director of the TVET sector, to speak on the issues of TVET and what our vision is for TVET in this country. Like the vision, I will leave for you to articulate it. NTA, please let's talk about the issues here in France.
The governor of Taras region, Aletta Frederick, highlighted the recent developments in the region's towns, as well as challenges faced in the areas of education, sport, and youth.
Apart from that, from the Ministry of Youth, what we have solicited from TICA, we have put up a computer lab for them, with the Office of the Governor, if you go, they will see it, Honorable, where they have a basic computer training for the out-of-school youth. It's not on. It's not on. It's not on peers, but they are training. Because we are in sports, I would also love to see that the ministry also start to assist governance clubs, where we give opportunities to young people. Those that are participating in your sports are school going children. We do not have young people that are out of school. School going children, and I also want to compliment and thank the Ministry of Education that always assisted us, Ministry of Youth that always assisted us, whether it's with transport, accommodation at the youth center, and of course, the Ministry of Education helped to release those learners that are participating in the sports. We have, just to give you a brief background, we have actually started for soccer in Nepal. That is to prepare them for the Ministry of Culture. We did quite well this year. It's just it could be somehow at same time. But honorable, you were there, no joke. We'll definitely get them next year. Quite well, and I think it's not all learners that are coaching that are both academically, so we need to make sure that we create these different platforms for them to explore and expose themselves, and then we build on their talent and skills they have. We have added specifically governance club. Because I know previously when I was still a learner, also a child, there were schools that normally place a rugby, but somehow along the way, it has died, but now with this governance club, we are now trying to also revive that part. So we have added a rugby to our sports clubs. We have added this year volleyball also, because we don't only want to focus on soccer and football. But this is only a school going case that we gave this opportunity, and they are doing quite very, very well. Overall, of course, I'm happy we have spoke about it, the Nama language. Honorable is fully aware about the position of the language, and of course from the training agreement also. It's a milestone that we have reached as it's a region. We had students, there were three students from the Northern Cape that were studying.
Let's pause here now and take a trip to the marketplace. We have a lot more news yet coming your way, so stay tuned.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Olio mnangeshefa na wahara kushivifa oma kuroyo kupitira mohorike radio station na weyo Eagle FM. Enya mkuro olongaha. Ningi kwa tafano na Monica kushikondosha ipindi kono rahita tuimwe, heari imwe, ne heari, imwe imwe no hamano. That is 081-7147-116. Mumberewa kono rahita tu natu, mbali o heta tu vatatu, ne nola no natu. Nenge tumo emaila ku monica@eaglefm.com.na. Opo mwane oshijemo shiri nawa.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. In other news, the Uvungu Vungu Green Scheme in Kavango East is currently functioning at just 50% capacity due to significant delays in accessing essential farming equipment. Farm manager Flores Smith revealed this on Monday during a visit to the farm by the Villager newspaper. Smith raised concerns over growing losses as large quantities of maize remain unharvested in the fields. The farm produces maize with 310 hectares, both for commercial and small-scale farmers. Although the necessary budgets have been approved, the execution of procurement and delivery is lagging behind. Smith emphasized that the team is fully prepared to ramp up operations, but warned that without urgent and timely support, Namibia could fall short of its crucial food security goals. The maize is ready to harvest and extremely dry, but due to the fact that we don't have our own combined harvester, it will remain in the field until we will receive one that we have requested from Grootfontein, Smith said. I called the farm manager in Grootfontein, but he told me that they are still busy with the harvester, that means we need to wait for them until they are down. Then we can also have access to the combined harvester, Smith added. Let's now take a listen to that full conversation facilitated by our reporter, Anakleta Haikera.
On the fields. We have not started harvesting anything. We are still waiting for the combine to arrive.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So this project does not yet, and listen carefully what I say and what I do not say. We do not yet have our own combine. The minister is in the process of buying it. But it takes time. We will have it from the next season. For now, we're still dependent on a combine that must come here to harvest our grain. We have arranged everything with a contractor of Advanced Truck Repairs But their combine is still working in Kwazulu-Natal. I just had the small scale farmers with me. I had three of them today requesting, when will the combine arrive? The guy with the transport told me in the morning, are you ready to harvest? Can I send the truck? No, you cannot. The combine is still busy in Grootfontein. It's not finished there. Whenever it's finished, it will come this side. So what is the yield? Sorry, I cannot. I cannot give you any figure. I have not even harvested one truckload. So that is for the future to answer.
Okay.
Right. This is one part of the question. The next question might be, what is going to happen during the winter season? We are preparing fields as we speak now to plant wheat, because that is the winter crop. We have done 166 hectares. So we have one half of the farm with maize and the other half of the farm we are going to plant wheat now. There is 7 center pivots all up in the side of the dairy. The planter you have found it at the main gate is busy planting wheat. So that block we started this morning. From there we are going to that side of the dairy side. You found me in the tractor on Friday when you were here.
Yeah.
And that was the final land preparation. So I was busy leveling that implement to get it operate correctly. So I did not have time to answer any of your questions last week. Sorry. But you know why.
Yeah. Do you perhaps have any hectares of the wheat that you are planting?
That, well, just repeat the question because I cannot hear you.
The hectares of the wheat. You mentioned wheat. How many hectares of
166.
Wheat are we looking at?
166.
Okay.
So one half, I can almost say one half the farm is planted with maize and the other half will be planted with wheat.
Okay.
When we have our own combine, this picture will change immediately. Because then we can harvest in time. This maize was ready for harvesting the second week of April already. It should have been gone. And then all the fields can be planted with wheat. And the combine will be here definitely before we harvest our wheat.
Mm-hmm.
So that will be all off. By the end of this year, we will plant 310 hectares of maize.
Mm-hmm.
Then all the fields can be planted.
Okay. And how has the farm performed so far this year in terms of
crop off the field? We are ready to perform and put everything under production by the end of the year. So, your question is, what is the key areas to improve so that we can increase our production? It is already being in motion. The ministry already got that money from Treasury, from the budget. It is allowed, it is approved already. So it's now a matter of what can we get finished by the end of the year?
Yeah.
And on the other hand, just remember, the farm manager is not in charge of getting all that done. It's been done by the ministry or somebody in higher financial positions. Minister of Finance are involved. Mm-hmm. Many other people are involved. We on the farm are involved in our personal relationship into production. How do we feel? How committed are we?
Yeah.
How dedicated are we?
Yeah.
That is when we come into. And where did you find me? Inside the tractor.
Mm-hmm.
Where was I Saturday? I was in the tractor. I was there yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Because we need to get in front now, not to get behind schedule on planting.
Mm-hmm.
So we have done all the preparation in advance. And this morning, the tractor and the planter started. So now that should be continuously running, maybe for 9-10 days from today on, we should be finished. And we should have all our wheat in the soil and water should run.
Now, the issue of the combine harvester, how has it affected you as a farm manager? From
50% of my production is gone.
Okay.
It sounds very serious, but that is true.
It's serious.
If I plant half the farm with maize, I have half the production.
Mm-hmm.
If I can get it off in time, which is, it should be finished, be sold by now, I can put the whole farm under wheat production, but I cannot because the maize is still on the field. I'm waiting for a combine from somebody else. And this process repeats itself in December.
Mm-hmm.
If I have my own combine, I will get the wheat off in time and plant the full farm with mice.
Mm-hmm.
It's an effect of 50% loss of production.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're right, you have crop on the ground which you cannot remove. Mm-hmm. So you cannot plant in time on the next season. It's difficult.
Yeah.
It looks like you are only in our production all the way.
Mm-hmm.
And there you had it. Now we pause here. When we do return, we'll be bringing you what's making headlines in regards to economic indicators.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back. And now for some economic indicators. Today on agricultural commodities, the top commodity gainer is palm oil at 1.86%, with the biggest losers being rice at -0.87%. Corn is coming in at -0.78% and wheat at -0.75%. In regards to energy commodities, the top commodity gainers are natural gas, UK GBP at 1.19%, crude oil WTI at 0.89%, natural gas EU Dutch 0.83%, and blend crude oil at 0.61%. Now, in metal commodities, the commodity loser for today is steel rebar at -2.85%, copper coming in at -2.26%, and gold at 0.60%. South Africa's economy grows 0.1%. The South African economy grew by just 0.1% on a quarter in the first quarter of 2025, following a downwardly revised 0.4% increase in the previous quarter. While analysts predicted stagnation, 4 out of 10 industries registered growth, with agriculture at +15.2% contributing the most, followed by transport at +2.4%, trade at +0.5%, and finance at 0.2%. Manufacturing and mining and quarrying were the biggest drags, declining by 2.0% and 4.1% respectively, which is mainly due to persistent inefficiencies in the country's vital infrastructure. On the demand side, growth was positively influenced by household consumption at +0.4% and inventories. Net trade, however, contributed negatively to the expenditure of gross domestic product, or GDP, as the 1% growth in exports was outpaced by a 2% increase in imports. Fixed investment contracted by 1.7% and government spending fell 0.1%. Now, on a yearly basis, the GDP expanded by 0.8% in the first quarter, maintaining the same pace as the fourth quarter, which marked the strongest growth in a year. The annual inflation rate in Georgia edged up to 3.5% in May 2025 from 3.4% in the previous month. Prices increased at a faster pace for food and non-alcoholic beverages at 8.3% versus 7.0% in April, and clothing and footwear 0.8% versus 0.3%. Meanwhile, costs fell at a softer pace for finishings, household equipment and maintenance at -2.3% versus -2.7%, and prices growth moderated for miscellaneous goods and services at 5.9% versus 6.1%, restaurants and hotels 6.0% versus 6.1%, housing utilities 0.6% and versus 1.1%, and health at 9.0% 9.2%. On a monthly basis, consumer prices rose 0.4% in May, following a 0.2% gain in April. And now we pause here, take a trip to the marketplace. We won't be long. We'll be back with news beyond the borders. Remember, our studio line is also very much open to you. This number in studio is 083-288-401. You're also encouraged to come through, air your opinions and contributions right here on the Radar News Bulletin.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Get social with us on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. Our handle is Eagle FM Namibia.
Olio mnangeshefa nwahara kushigifa oma akuro ya kupitira mohorike radio station ayo Eagle FM. Enya mkulu olongaha. Ninge kwa tafano na Monica kushikondosha ipindi konorahe tatu imwe, heari imwe, ne heari, imwe imwe no hamano. That is 081-7147-116. Mamberewa konorahe tatu natu, mbali ohe tatu vatatu, ne nola no natu. Ninge tumo emaila ku monica@eaglefm.com.na. Opo mwane oshijemo shiri nawa.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Welcome back, and now we take you to news beyond the borders. We're starting off regionally, then we move over to continental news. Thereafter, you can expect international news. Now, starting off in South Africa, where reforms are in place to boost South Africa's financial services. Let's take a listen.
Operation Pumelela is the short name for the South African Financial Sector Competitiveness Task Force. It was established late last year to identify and address structural barriers that constrain the sector's ability to ensure freer financial flows to the rest of the continent and the rest of the world, among other issues. One of the areas discussed in this regard was the raising of hard currency for South African businesses to invest in the rest of Africa or elsewhere in the world. Given that South Africa currently doesn't allow for private business to raise capital other than rands, which results in punitive costs when having to translate rand into other currencies.
It's always going to be the case that South African companies are going to need South African rands to finance their activities inside South Africa. But to make them more competitive in the rest of the world, it would certainly help them if they could raise hard currencies more easily right here at home for their investments that they're going to make in the rest of the world.
When it comes to the cost of capital for SMMEs, Theobald also mentioned that there were challenges in so-called private markets as well as the publicly listed space.
At the moment, both of those avenues have various frictional costs. If you're in the private capital markets, one of the challenges is that we don't have a very good environment for private equity funds to operate from. So at the moment, lots of funds who want to operate particularly across the African region go and domicile themselves in Mauritius and other locations which have much more conducive regulatory processes that make it much cheaper to operate from those markets.
Theobald suggested that a resolution to this issue would result in more fund managers operating in the country, which could serve as an additional source of capital for private companies in the country. Meanwhile, Nedbank chairman Daniel Minelli, who's a member of the South African Financial Sector Competitive Task Force, said that it was important for some of the considerations to be translated into policy and finally implementation.
A year from now, I would hope that we will see some of these proposals, for example, being announced in the national budget as some of the initiatives that were going to be implemented to get us to move forward. So those are the kind of signals that I suppose one should look out for so that we don't end up just being involved in producing plans, however good they are, but that don't find a way to actually getting implemented.
Financial regulators were among the attendees at the deliberations on pushing the frontiers of the financial sector and saw great value in the interactions.
As the Financial Sector Conduct Authority, we are the regulator for pension funds, we're the regulator for securities, so for capital markets, and we also have a consumer protection mandate. So our role here today has been to listen to and to respond to some of the suggestions that have been made. And I think going forward, a lot of the inputs that come out of this will probably find their way into the policy environment.
Deputy Finance Minister Dr. David Masondo gave the keynote address at the gathering, supportive of the idea of greater mobilization of financial resources to help spur greater investment, economic growth, and in turn improve the country's social development indicators like unemployment, in the process saying that South Africa's financial sector was a national asset that needed to become a key driver for inclusive development, regional leadership, and global relevance. Nompumelelo Losiziba, SABC News, Johannesburg.
South Africa's economy stuck on 1% growth mark.
New to other developing news this Tuesday, South Africa's economy showed modest growth of 0.1% in the first quarter of this year, beating forecasts of zero growth or indeed a contraction. This growth, although slower than the 0.4% expansion in the final quarter of last year, shows some resilience amid global uncertainties. Agriculture was the biggest driver of this growth, with the sector surging by 15.8%, driven by increased activity in animal production. Manufacturing output shrunk by 2%, mining contracting by 4.1%, reflecting persistent structural challenges and soft demand both locally and around the world. Now, Newsroom Africa's business reporter, Ntokozo Khumalo, joins us now from Statistics South Africa in Pretoria with more of those details. And in fact, Ntokozo, good afternoon. In the build-up to this announcement, there were figures saying that GDP was not looking great. In fact, forecasts were saying statistics reflected stagnant economic activity over the first quarter. I mean, can we call 0.1% growth at all?
Hi, Michelle. Indeed, that 0.1% growth, the surprise with expectations of 0% growth or the economy going into contraction. And we did speak to Statistician General. We do have him here with us to just unpack those numbers and how sustainable that growth is. Stats General, thank you so much for talking to us. Now, you did warn in your presentation that the economy is still vulnerable to moving either way to growth or contraction. Talk us through the numbers that we saw, with agriculture once again being that shooting star, marginal growth of 0.1%?
Let us start like this, Ntokozo. One is that over time, our economy hasn't been growing sufficiently enough. And I think I've listened to commentators from yesterday in printed media as well as on television, thinking that it might be going flat at zero or going in the negative. And indeed, of course, what happens is that agriculture always comes in last, because unlike your other industries or your other sectors like manufacturing and mining that you can see, you receive agriculture last. So in this regard, we are saying that agriculture, when it came, it contributed 0.4 of a percentage points. When you look at the economy, you don't only look at the growth. You also look at what it's contributing. So it contributed 0.4 of a percentage point, and while it grew at 15.8%. And another one that contributed strongly is transport. Transport contributed 0.2 of a percentage point. And indeed, the others that went in the positive contributed 0.1 of a percentage point each. Now, these are the ones that tried, these are the industries that tried their best to keep our economy above a zero, at 0.1%, as we have seen, which is an expansion for the first quarter of 2025. However, there are those that didn't do well. Let us look at mining and manufacturing. If you look at mining and manufacturing, they both contributed negative 0.2 of a percentage point each, while they grew also in the negative. However, they were not enough to offset what the other industries have done to contribute in the positive sense. So if you look at agriculture, for example, we saw increased activity in horticulture and animal products, whereas in transport, it was land transport, air transport, and other transport services that have contributed quite strongly.
Mm. And now just talking about the question that Michelle asked, is that 0.1% growth doesn't show stagnation, because we saw that 0.1% growth in the first quarter of 2024. Does that data indicate stagnation in the economy?
Well, one of the things that we should look at is coming out from 2024, from the first quarter, we have seen our economy growing flat at zero and all the way, but particularly in the third quarter, it went in the negative. So it contracted, and the biggest contribution came from agriculture. But it recovered in the fourth quarter. It went to 0.5% as revised. We had initially said it was at 0.6%, but now with revisions that we published today, we're sitting at 0.5% for the fourth quarter of 2024. And going into the first quarter, we are seeing a 0.1%. One thing that I can tell you is that all this 0.something, they tell us our economy is not even growing above 1%. I mean, in the fourth quarter of 2024, it grew at 0.5%, 0.5. Now it has grown at 0.1. That is a tenth of a percent. So our economy is not growing sufficiently enough. And when it's coming very close to a zero, it can easily slide below a zero and go into the negative. But that is not a story we can talk about today. We still have to go and measure. And when we come back the next quarter, we'll tell you the story.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, manufacturers in Zambia welcome sustained fuel reductions.
Between March and June 2025, Zambia has experienced notable fuel price reductions. Petrol has cumulatively decreased by 3 kwacha, 62 ngwe per litre, and diesel has reduced by 7 kwacha, 42 ngwe per litre, while kerosene has eased by 4 kwacha, 77 ngwe per litre. The Zambia Association of Manufacturers, ZAMP, says the sustained reduction in fuel pump prices will enable manufacturers to pass the benefits on to consumers.
I mean, it affects the manufacturers in two ways. One, on distribution costs, because a lot of our vehicles use diesel to run their trucking fleet, which distributes our products. And secondly, of course, is the issue of supplementing our power and energy needs through diesel generators, which a lot of the manufacturers have installed over the last couple of years, looking at the load shedding that was taking place. So this cost reduction, if it is sustained, I mean, what we need to see is that the fuel price remains low over a few months for us to actually pass that benefit down to the consumer. There's no reason for us to keep prices high if there is a consistent low price or reduction in fuel prices.
In a separate interview, economist Kelvin Chisanga describes the development as a sign of healthier fundamentals taking hold in the economy.
With lower input costs, companies can now offer more competitive pricing, meaning they can now foster health market competition. This will in turn now give that stimulation demand in terms of having more investment activities and support even then now the overall economic growth in terms of trying to interplay into the tax structure. So what you should be able to see from that perspective, that we'll have the energy intensive sectors such as mining, agriculture and manufacturing will stand to have more of a significant benefit.
And a transport economist at the Zander Institute of Policy Analysis and Research, ZIPA, John Mututwa, says the reduced prices of fuel may lead to a reduction of basic essential commodities such as millet meal, cooking oil sugar and bread, among others.
It's very important to understand that fuel or transport itself is an important input into the production process in an economy. So in this case, for example, key sectors like manufacturing, agriculture, retail and trade, and storage and transport to some extent, these are likely to see a reduction in the cost of production. So because of that, you also expect that to be translated into the goods and services that are produced from those sectors.
Masauso Mukwayaya, ZMBC News, Lusaka.
WFP's Kenya chief speaks on donor funding cuts and solutions to crisis.
Staying right here in Kenya, Wilkerson Nyawa sat down with the WFP's country director for Kenya for insight in the causes of the looming crisis and some of the possible solutions.
We haven't been able to offer 100% of a food basket for a very long time, many, many years. But in the past couple of years, we've had to move that food basket into 40% of a minimum recommended food basket. And now in June, for the first time, I think in the history of both of the camps in Dadaab and Kakuma, we're going to have to go down to a 28% of the recommended food basket. We've never been that low. And so we can tell you what might be the impacts, but we've never seen the full impact. This is devastating. But we've seen over time a reduction in donor interest. The real crisis this year was a severe reduction in the food aid of USAID, and we all know that story, of the United States, and they were the largest.
It's time for Month-End Magic at WB. Get a 1 kg Jungle Oats for only $37.99. 2 times 1.5 kg Real Good Mixed Chicken for $149.99 with Smart Buy. 5 kg Nice Rice for only $94.99 with Smart Buy. 2.2 kg Surf Hand Washing Powder for $49.99. And a Huggies Dry Comfort Value Pack for only $154.99. See all our Month-End Specials at www.vurman.com.
Let's now resume.
Percent of that food basket came from the United States. So this has had a severe impact. And then, because of all the things we know in the international news, several other donors followed suit. And we already have severe cases of malnutrition in Kakuma. If you go to the IRC stabilization hospital, you will see them every single day. But the number of those cases will increase incredibly.
And what steps are being taken to bridge these funding gaps?
It's not only just an African problem, it's a global problem. And right now I don't see a clear solution. But what I do know is if countries start to put forward resources like the ones we've had traditionally in Kakuma and Dadaab, normally it takes 6 months for them to reach us. So we would have to be signing contracts today with whatever donor for it to then, if they're doing food aid, to be shipped to Mombasa and then carried up to the camps. So I can already tell you today that January looks very, very severe. Now, one other thing that can help us and we can move much faster is if we receive cash assistance. It allows us to put money directly to people's phones very, very quickly, but we still need a cash resource in order to do that. And right now, we don't see those resources in the pipeline. So I'm not quite sure. I'm not optimistic for the future. We can kind of, as you do at home when you're short on budget and short on food in the cupboard, you can extend it and stretch it as much as possible. But at some point, the most vulnerable population will no longer have food in kind or food in cash. It can mean theft of commodities. It can mean conflict. So what we really need to do is think about the wider ramifications and see from many different angles what we can do to mitigate them, not only as a country, but as a continent.
Meanwhile, in DRC Congo conflict worsens food insecurity.
The food situation in the eastern DRC is so bad since around 8 million of people are facing a food problem. The people close to the operating zone of war are facing that problem as they don't have any way to go to their farm. They don't have access to their farm, to their food. And these people are the ones who feed cities which are under government or rebel control. And the lack of food can be seen in the food situation in the eastern DRC is so bad since around 8 million of people are facing a food problem. The people close to the operating zone of war are facing that problem as they don't have any way to go to their farm. They don't have access to their farm, to their food. And these people are the ones who feed cities which are under government or rebel control. And the lack of food can be seen in the population in the both parts because farms are still far for what can be a secure zone. Another fact is that in some zone close to the war zone, farmers are finding mines or other military equipment such as bombs in their farm. That's what don't allow them to cultivate. And because of that, the lack of food is a really danger in the city of Goma, which is the hub of the eastern DRC, but in also other cities around Goma and all villages, because many villagers have not yet get the access to their farms. The closure of the airport of Goma contributes a lot in this tragedy, which has become a paradox because, you know, DRC doesn't have good road to supply anything from a point to another point. Everything was transiting by Goma airport before reaching another area. So as now, the airport of Goma is closed since the city was taken over by AFC M23 rebels. These have contribute a lot in the lack of food, lack of supply in other region. But unfortunately now, as the Goma airport is closed, even NGOs doesn't have all means to supply food or anything as items in some zones. And this is the biggest challenge which are facing humanitarian, but also locals in the eastern DRC. It's in the north part of North Kivu, which is called commonly here Grand Nord, where this tragedy has been impacted a lot, the life of citizens, because in that zone, fightings are intense and every day between M23 and some Wazalendo groups in Lubero territory, in the south of Lubero territory, and a part of Walikale territory, where every day people cannot go to their farm, to their land, as fighting are every day. So, as people can't produce food locally and they don't have any supplier road to get food from outside, the lack of food in that party is huge. And when that party, which is a big agricultural producer, doesn't have food, that affects all the neighboring zone till some hundreds kilometers, a city as Goma, which had beans and cassava people eat here. usually comes from the north of North Kivu. And for now, north of North Kivu is not producing, then also Goma doesn't have food. But not only Goma, which is under rebel control, but also a city like Butembo, which is under government control, also depends by the north part of North Kivu, the zone of Lubero, to produce, to get food. Nowadays, DRC is importing food from Rwanda and Uganda, and especially in the zone under M23 control, they are reinforcing security in the rural zone to allow to locals to get access to their farms so that they can produce food to themselves and also to other cities, to other big cities such as Bukavu, Goma, and Kiwanja. But for now, situation have not yet been resolved because the lack of food is a really, really danger which are facing people here in the Eastern DRC. Both sides, the side under the government's control and also the side under the AFC M23 control.
Moving on with other news, Berlin court ruling complicates Germany's asylum stance.
Germany has acted unlawfully by turning away asylum seekers at the border. That's the ruling from a Berlin court on Monday, citing a case in which border police expelled three Somalis who tried to enter the country from Poland. They were sent back to Poland on the grounds that they had sought to enter from a safe third country, a court statement said. The ruling challenges the tougher migration stance by Chancellor Friedrich Merz's conservative-led coalition. He was elected in February, promising a migration crackdown that has caused concern in neighbouring countries. Germany's Interior Minister, Alexander Dobrindt, defended the expulsions.
Das Gericht hat in diesem Beschluss ausgeführt,
in this decision, the court stated that the justification for our measure should have been more specific.
Hätte sein sollen. Das heißt,
this means we will be complying with this request and providing more detailed reasons.
Und liefern die dezidierteren Begründungen.
We are sticking to the rejections because we recognize that the legal basis is clear.
Wir sehen, dass die Rechtsgrundlage gegeben.
And will therefore continue to proceed in this way, regardless of this individual decision.
Von dieser Einzelfallentscheidung.
Migration is among German voters' biggest concerns. Backlash against an influx of new arrivals has contributed to a rise in the popularity of the far-right Alternative for Germany party, which came second in the recent federal election. It's a profound shift since Germany's refugees welcome culture during Europe's migrant crisis in 2015. That was under Merz's conservative predecessor, Angela Merkel. On Monday, Dobrindt reiterated that the number of asylum seekers is, quote, still too high.
Es geht darum, das deutliche Signal auch zu setzen, dass wir weiterhin daran.
The aim is to send a clear signal that we will continue to maintain that Germany cannot cope with this high number of new arrivals, asylum seekers and refugees,
nicht zurechtkommt,
and that these rejections will therefore continue to take place.
Stattfinden werden.
Merz's government issued an order last month to reject undocumented migrants, including asylum seekers, at Germany's borders. Germany's Greens party, now in opposition, said that Monday's ruling vindicated their stance that Merz's migration crackdown was unworkable.
The US pushes countries for best offers on trade by Wednesday.
The Trump administration wants countries to give them their best offer on trade negotiations by Wednesday, according to a draft letter seen by Reuters. The draft from the Office of the U.S. Trade Representative is a glimpse at how President Donald Trump plans to bring tricky negotiations with dozens of countries to a close. Those talks kicked off in early April when Trump paused his Liberation Day tariffs for 90 days until July 8th, after the levies sent markets into a revolt. The draft letter also suggests an urgency within the administration to complete deals against its own tight deadline, now 5 weeks out. Officials have repeatedly promised that several agreements were nearing completion. However, Britain is the only major U.S. trading partner to have reached an agreement. Even that was closer to a framework for ongoing talks than a final deal. Over the weekend, Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent said on Fox News Channel's special report that some big deals were almost ready.
There are a couple of very large deals that are close. A couple of them are more complicated. And as we saw with the president's threat of 50% tariffs last Friday, the EU came to the table very quickly over the weekend. So now we've got the EU in motion also.
In the draft Reuters saw, the U.S. is asking countries to list their best proposals in a number of key areas, including tariff and quota offers for purchase of U.S. industrial and agricultural products, as well as plans to amend any non-tariff barriers. The letter states that the U.S. will evaluate the responses within days and offer a, quote, possible landing zone that could include a reciprocal tariff rate. It was unclear which countries would receive the letter, but it was directed at those with active negotiations. Washington has been engaged in such talks with the European Union, Japan, Vietnam, and India, among others. A USTR official said trade talks were ongoing at a, quote, rapid pace, and that it was in the best interest of all parties to, quote, take stock of progress and assess any next steps.
A Colorado attacker suspect is charged with federal hate crime.
My office has charged Mohammed Sabri Soliman, age 45, with the commission of a hate crime under 18 U.S.C. section 249. When that offense includes attempted murder, the statutory maximum federal sentence is life in prison. According to our complaint and the charges brought by D.A. Doherty's office, Mr. Soliman stated that he had been planning this attack for a year, and he acted because he hated what he called the Zionist group. But what the charges allege that he did was to throw Molotov cocktails at a group of men and women, some of them in their late 80s, burning them as they peacefully walked on a Sunday to draw attention to Israeli hostages held in Gaza. And when he was interviewed about the attack, he said he wanted them all to die. He had no regrets, and he would go back and do it again. He said that he had previously tried to purchase a firearm, but resorted to the Molotov cocktails when he could not purchase a gun because he was not a legal citizen. I remind you that Mr. Soliman is presumed innocent until proven guilty. My office and our partners hope justice will help heal the people in this community and in the communities throughout the country shaken by yesterday's attack.
OpenAI's Altman sees 2026 as a turning point for AI in businesses.
I think we'll be at the point next year where you can not only use a system to sort of automate some business processes or build these new products and services, but you can really say, I have this hugely important problem in my business. I will throw a ton of compute at it if you can solve it. And the models will be able to go figure out things that teams of people on their own can't do. I would bet next year that in some limited cases, at least in some small ways, we start to see agents that can help us discover new knowledge or can figure out solutions to business problems that are kind of very non-trivial. Right now, it's very much in the category of, okay, if you've got some like repetitive cognitive work, you can automate it at a kind of a low level on a short time horizon. And so what an enterprise will be able to do, we talked about this a little bit, but just like give it your hardest problem. If you're a chip design company, say, go design me a better chip than I could have possibly had before. If you're a biotech company trying to cure some disease, say, just go work on this for me. Like, that's not so far away.
And it's a wrap. That's a wrap for today's episode of On the Radar News Bulletin. To stay tuned for the On Corner Thinking program, brought to you by Benedict Simon and Patemashenda. From Indafa, happy Juju, it is goodbye and have yourself a wonderful day.